great. Beauty.
Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of Third Degree Burn. I'm your host, Kirk Greenfield, and we are going to be looking at two Alpha Flight issues tonight that seem to go together. They're bookended. They're a pair. They're 7 and 8. Now, this is about a half year into the series now that fans were clamoring for and that John Byrne finally agreed to take the helm for. Coming up, we have issue number 7, and we should probably introduce the panel here. We're going to go alphabetically. First, we have Tim Elliott.
Hello.
And then Brian Hughes is here.
Hey there.
And we have Nigel Sink from Japan. Hello.
Hello there.
Hello. And as I introduce myself, I'm Kirk Greenfield, so just kind of sitting in as host. We're kind of pressed for time tonight, but we're going to do an adequate job covering these two issues. And I believe that Tim has the first book. Does anyone have anything that they need to share regarding Alpha Flight before we jump in? Okay. Tim?
Actually, I would say probably this is one of the issues where Byrne really tried to pour on the Canada, which you don't, I mean, and I'm not talking about the folklore or anything like that. I'm actually talking about in the city, around the people, people with actual French names and such. And he kind of got a couple things wrong, but we'll delve into that if we get in.
Well, I think most of this, I think he says most of this book, you have to consider it being in French or French Canadian.
Right. Not in English. Right. It's translated for us.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. Right. It's very Canada centric. Or maybe Quebec would be a better way to say that, but I'll save my comments for later.
Well, I think that's, to me, that's always been the charm of Alpha Flight, that it's very Canada-focused, and it kind of separates it from the rest of the Marvel Universe. I've always appreciated that. It kind of got away from it later, I think, after Byrne left the book. Okay, I do have issue number 7, and this is, we have a main story, and then we have a backup story. So our main story is, well, let me get on to the specifics. Our writer, artist, and letterer is John Byrne. Our colorist is Andy Yankus. Letterer is Michael Higgins. Editor is Denny O'Neill and Linda Grant. And Jim Shooter is listed as being important.
Sorry.
It says a cover date of February 1984 with an on-sale date of November 15th, 1983. 32 total pages, and it was cost 60 cents. Other notable Byrne work this month is he was very busy with covers. Captain America 290, he did the cover art. Daredevil 203, cover art. FF 263, he is writer-artist. G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, number 20, cover art. The Amazing Spider-Man 249, cover art. And then The Thing, number 8, he is the writer. All of these, all the books we cover can be found in Alpha Flight Classics Volume 1, trade paperback from 07, or the Alpha Flight by John Byrne Omnibus hardcover from 2017.
You can also buy it in Kindle format on Amazon.
That's true. It's just probably just a digital version of the Omnibus.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It makes it look so much better. Because if you remember, the paper stock that they were using back at this particular time was really, really bad, and the ink spread, so it made Byrne's art look especially muddy. Mm. So looking at it on the digital reprint was so much nicer.
Yeah, I'm looking at scans of the actual book, and it's a little muddy. It looks a little old.
When you get into the city shots, or when they're, you know, the like the interlude in Winnipeg. It is so muddy. And you look at the digital copy and you're like, wow, this is like George Perez drawing, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earth where everybody's together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Tim, do you think Byrne knew something about the future? Because the villain in the Daredevil issue you just mentioned is called Trump.
I doubt that. Well, Trump was around in the 80s, so mm-hmm. he was a known figure, but I don't think he's that clairvoyant that he is able to. All right, let me hold on, guys. I've lost my book.
You were talking about that this was reprinted in Alpha Flight Classics, and that happens to be where I'm looking at it. I don't see the muddiness issue that you refer to, but
not in the reprints. I'm looking at the actual scan of the actual book, and it's just a little. The paper is old, and it's a little. Even some of the dialogue's a little. If you're looking at it at a distance, the dialogue's a little hard to read too.
I bought this off the spinner rack, but off the. Off the shelf in the comic book stores as this came out. Yeah. And I don't recall any complaints about the artwork at the time. But let's cover that later on. Go ahead.
All right. Our first story, which is the main story, is called The Importance of Being Deadly. This is a play on the importance of being earnest. Northstar has taken his sister, Jean-Marie, to a psychologist, Dr. Bosson, in Quebec, Canada. The doctor tells Jean-Paul he can't find any sign his sister is psychologically unbalanced. He speculates since the twins were not raised together, Northstar may perceive his sister as having a split personality. He does warn she might develop a third personality if the two existing ones are tried to be, or if they tried to be merged. Flashback. It is revealed that the twins were only recently reunited. Joya finding he had a twin sister and the horror of her more repressed personality when visiting the school where she taught. Doctor advises Jean-Paul he must learn to accept who she is and not who he wants her to be. The twins have a pleasant stroll through the streets of Quebec. Jean-Paul tells his sister about his friend Raymond Belmont, who helped him in the past when a mugger suddenly snatches Jean-Marie's purse. This triggers her transformation to Aurora. She speeds ahead of the thief. She toys them a bit before landing 100 punches in less than a second. A half hour later at the police station, the desk officer tells the twins the purse snatcher was bailed out by a local thug named Ernest St. Ives, known as Deadly Ernest to the neighborhood. St. Ives is rumored to have connections to the American Magi. Is that how it's pronounced? Magi or Magi?
I think it's Magia.
Mafia. It's the mob.
Yeah.
Outside the station, Northstar's best friend Belmont greets them and the trio head to Raymond's Cafe. Aurora asks why the cafe is so empty at this height of the lunch hour. One topical Douglas Adam reference later, and Raymond starts to explain about his trouble with St. Ives when his daughter Danielle interrupts. She has recently moved in with her estranged father after her mother died. He explains the restaurant is empty because of St. Ives ordered his men to harass any potential customers. Two men enter the cafe and proclaim they are here for Raymond. Jean-Paul and Danielle are shoved aside, but Northstar takes no action for fear of revealing his secret identity. Raymond and Aurora are taken outside to a waiting limo. Aurora will play along until she meets St. Ives. The limo window rolls down, and a strange, silent chill seems to flood the street. Raymond is pushed in front of a large man in the back of the limo. Raymond exclaims he will not sell his cafe to St. Ives. St. Ives removes his leather glove and regrets it has come to this. He reaches out and gently touches Raymond's face. The life slowly drains from the cafe owner, and he falls to the street dead to the shock of his daughter. St. Ives' thugs ask about Aurora. Mistaking her for Raymond's daughter, he orders her in the car. She will now negotiate for the sale of the cafe now that her father is dead. St. Ives warns Northstar and Danielle not to follow him. Jean-Paul vows vengeance on St. Ives for taking his sister and murdering his friend Raymond. Unconnected interlude. In a Winnipeg mall, Alec Thorne is playing chess against 9 different opponents. He breaks for lunch, and while enjoying a hot dog, he is approached by a young woman with dark hair who refers to him as Smart Alec. She introduces herself as Delphine Courtney. She offers him an opportunity he can't refuse. The end. All right, our backup story, which is continuing the origins of Alpha Flight, is entitled Let a Child Be Born. 15 years ago, in an archaeological dig, a metalhead band is found by Richard Easton. His two fellow scientists warn Easton not to let his enthusiasm cloud his objectivity, and he is instructed to catalog the find and put it away. Later that night, he is drawn to the storage tent. He dons the headpiece and is confronted by the gods Hodak, Nelvana, goddess of the Northern Lights, and Turok, the shaper. The gods ask for his help in saving the world. They ask for his seed. Nelvana transforms into a beautiful girl, and he spends one night with her. The next morning, he finds 9 years have passed. The dig is long abandoned. The experience and loss of time drives him insane, and he flees into the wilderness. 1 year later, Nelvana appears to Michael T. Youngman and asks for help with her child, the result of her night with Easton. He helps the god give birth to Narya, who the shaman binds to this reality. The child is already a year old. She will be known as Snowbird and will fight the beasts that threaten the world. The end.
Well done.
Nice summary.
Yeah, I kind of took the wiki online was not very
wasn't very good,
detailed,
was it?
I kind of tried to beef it up a little bit, but I didn't have time to pull back the curtain. We got our shingles vaccines yesterday. It's kind of been kicking me in the butt. I've been kind of had a little fever going, and I've been feeling kind of under the weather. So, but they warned me that might happen. It's like when you get the flu shot, you kind of get the flu.
Yeah. So he, Byrne, I guess, isn't well versed in French.
No, are you talking about the way he spells Raymond's name?
Yeah, it's Vaminin.
Yeah, he puts an E on the end. Yeah.
And it would be Raymond Belmond, Belmonde. I guess the way it's spelled, Belmonde. But
yeah, I didn't try to give it an French accent.
Belmonde.
Mon Dieu, sacré bleu. Oui, oui, je suis entré. Okay.
Is this your monkey?
The Professor Besson. From the beginning, he reminded me of a fake doctor, like the fake one that Ultra Humanite portrayed in Generations. He just didn't seem like, he seemed like a fake character with the way his hair and just his appearance, like he's hiding under a disguise. I don't know if that ever came to anything in the story or if this was his only appearance.
He's got the same kind of beard as the master, that kind of
Yeah, it's true.
I wondered if it was going to turn out to be Mysterio. But I was wrong.
I don't think he shows up again. I think this whole little three-page interlude or beginning is just to show that, you know, Northstar is obviously, he knows his sister has a problem, and the doctor, I guess he says her two personalities are so disconnected that the doctor can't determine that she has a second personality. All he sees is Jean Marie, not Aurora. So he's not surprised that he can't help her. And the doctor's advice is basically, well, maybe you should accept her who she is instead of trying to turn her into something else. Because he wants his fun-loving sister back. He doesn't want the kind of uptight Jean Marie.
I love his comment at the end when he says, well, there's a possibility of a third personality coming out. At that point, I was hooked. I was like, oh, boy, where is this going?
Well, I thought...
I wonder if Peter David had read this before he took over, you know, about the time he took over the Hulk.
Oh, when he merged all those personalities? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the doctors, this is probably inappropriate for the doctor to say, but he says, your sister obviously has the potential to be a devastatingly beautiful woman.
Yeah.
It's a great pity she chooses to leave that potential unrealized. Like, that's not something a doctor should say.
No. No.
Your sister can be really hot. It's a shame she covers herself up.
Now, there was, I'm trying to see where it was that I saw that. It must be on the later page. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Continue on. Yeah. The scene in the street, though, that right there looks like that was a photo reference.
I think that's obvious. Yeah, that's a...
Yeah. You know, and then you've got that woman with the... She's in, like, the fuchsia outfit with her hair styled so 80s. And another couple led around, guy leading the woman around. It could be Archie and Betty.
The woman that's in the foreground you were just mentioning looks like she's drawn that's maybe supposed to be somebody. Somebody he knows or resembles somebody.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, was this, I guess this is around the time of his divorce. But, oh, that's right. Andrea had different hair.
Byrne's divorce?
Yeah. I think his divorce was happening around the time of his divorce, work on Alpha Flight, because he talked about that being a time of great emotional turmoil. Now the guy mugging her, and then she immediately turning into Aurora. She didn't change costume, of course,
No.
But she sure did, you know, quickly adjust her clothes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the 100 punches within a second. Ow.
The drip.
They'd probably kill him. I don't think it would just knock him out. I think.
Well, again, you know, it said that she doesn't, you know, she's got normal strength.
Mm.
And she is a tiny woman. You know, I think she's like maybe 110 pounds wet. But yeah, still 100 punches, super speed. Yeah.
Just stunning.
Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in where after she subdues the guy, and then she's let first thing she immediately takes her glasses off, lets her hair down. Her blouse is now open. She, and I thought they had, maybe I forgot this, they know, each personality knows of the other personality, correct? Aurora knows of the...
I don't think Jeannie Marie knows. Well, she knows of Aurora and detests her.
Right, because she thinks she's like a hussy.
Right. Yeah.
But does she think of her, maybe they think of each other as a separate person instead of...
I do. I think
own.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
But that was also true of Banner and Hulk. For a long time, both of them referred to the other identity as a separate person.
Mm.
And that's how we perceived it as well as fans. Mm. Are we? Are you up to the point where Mr. Belmond is introduced to Jean, Marie?
More or less.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I want to comment on the middle panel there. The third panel that of the five on this particular page where he's introduced, and she says, oh, Jean-Paul has told me all about you. And his reaction is, he has? That surprises me a little, my dear. They don't go after it, but the indication is that they share a secret or that there's more information there than we are going to be given right now.
Yeah, and even Northstar talked or thinks about that throughout the story before and after what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of comment that Raymond helped him come to terms with him being a mutant, but I think that's not really what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. No, he helped him come to terms with something that helped him come to terms of being a mutant.
Right, I think he helped him come to terms with him being gay. So this is already...
This is the first hint. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And except when we get another two pages beyond, when they introduce his daughter with flaming red hair, North Star's reaction is,
surprise,
it's your daughter? Mm. But how?
I mean, you never told me of a daughter.
Yeah.
Wow.
But go back to that page where she's introduced, and in the bottom right-hand corner of the bottom left-hand panel, there's a couple walking along happily. Number one, what the hell is she holding in her arms? It doesn't look like a mouse, a rabbit. It's not Baby Yoda, obviously.
It's a gremlin.
It's a gremlin?
It does look like I don't know if that's supposed to be a dog.
Wait, you've gone over the page.
Mm. Yeah. Are they supposed to be somebody that he knows? You know, like that gal that we saw in an earlier post, these are two people. They're not Marvel characters that I can imagine. I mean, if they were in New York, you know, you would see like Peter and Mary Jane and other characters walking around the streets and whatnot. But does make me wonder about that.
I think we've always speculated that.
Walter Linowski in his current date.
What?
It's Walter Linowski.
Oh,
it does look like. It does look like.
Looks Walter. A bit young, though, for Walter.
He's got his glasses on. Well, I think we speculated that when Byrne is drawing stuff at Canada, he might be drawing people he knew when he lived there.
Yeah.
It could be nobody famous, just people he knows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, didn't he remind you a little bit of John Carradine? David Carradine's father.
Who?
Belmont.
Oh.
No. I
get more of a kind of a Roddy McDowell vibe or a
Dr. Smith with a goatee.
Yeah, the goatee.
There you go. Zachary Taylor.
Yeah. Can I just go back to the page where, yeah, as he was introducing his sister to Belmond.
Yeah.
And then, because we mentioned about, yeah, he's surprised that she knows who he is. And then in the very next panel, though, the bottom left, Belmond's talking to North Star while Aurora's out of the way. And then he's saying, well, so you didn't tell her all about me.
Yeah.
And then he says, I thought that would have been odd. So that's another sort of hint about right. their relationship.
Yeah.
And then the last panel on that page, this is a different thing, but what she says there about, I believe it was an alien who called himself Ford Fairmont.
Right.
Ford and, fact.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to say... So I never got that at the time because I thought, Ford Fairmont, who's that? Because in Britain, the Hitchhiker's Guide, he was called Ford Prefect.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. But yeah, time is the version much doubly so. Yeah, that's...
Where's that the Fairmont sense. From then?
I think he was called Ford Canadian? Prefect in the book and in the TV show.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And it looks like that the name Ford Fairmont itself was... like maybe have been overdone and maybe they weren't able to use it for whatever reason. Cause if you look at it, the lettering is thicker.
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
So maybe they had to undo that.
Right. Maybe he didn't
that's
have
why,
the rights.
Yeah,
to
that's why I didn't get it really. Cause yeah,
that doesn't thinking, make sense.
I was thinking if it's Ford if it's Ford Prefect, who, you know, Who's this Ford Fairmont? You know, are they talking about Hitchhiker's Guide, or is it something totally different?
Yeah, I didn't get that, Nigel. Yeah. I mean, I got the reference, yeah. but it didn't click that the name is wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe it's with Harry Potter.
Yes, I was just going to mention that in the Sorcerer's Stone
and the Philosopher's Stone. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I think it's just cultural different sides mm-hmm. of the pond.
Mm-hmm. Probably. Well, you don't get the impression, I don't, but you don't get the impression that Raymond and North Star had a relationship. He was just more of a mentor.
No, right. No, I didn't. I mean,
I didn't go there, but I think there's a story to be told there with mm-hmm. there's some material that could be mined if somebody mm-hmm. wanted to do a standalone or a one shot or you know, mini series, Alpha Flight, the original years. I don't care. I think there's an opening there.
Yeah, but the thing is, you got to understand that when John Paul was in his younger years, before he became an Olympian and all that, he was involved in some pretty shady stuff.
Exactly, and I think that's the implication here. That maybe
as we find out later.
What's his name? His friend.
Raymond.
Yes, Raymond. May have been part of the separatist movement for the mm-hmm. French in Quebec.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But because
he's wearing an ascot, so obviously it's one or the other. Maybe both.
Maybe both. Yeah, and I think there's
push John and Prebber here.
I'll stop saying it now. I think there's material to be mined there.
Yeah, I mean, when I first read this, I would have been about 25. And these hints, if that's what they were, about his sexual orientation, if you like, they went over my head completely. I never got him as being that for that reason at all. Yeah. I mean, I thought, yeah, there's something between these two. They've known one another and they've got a secret. But I never thought of it being about being gay.
Yeah, I didn't either until I got letter pages.
It's only when I found out by reading about it later, and then when I came back and looked at it, then I saw it and thought, right, these are the hints. Because there's this hint on page 7, and then for me, there's another hint on page 10. But this might only be me, actually, but it's just when they're confronted with the thugs who are coming in to get Raymond. And North Star kind of tries to get in the way. And one of the heavy guys says, save the heroics, pretty boy.
Yeah.
Well, pretty boy is the kind of, might be the way that we would talk about somebody who's gay in Britain.
Right.
We call him a pretty boy.
But not here. And I mean, the thing is that, I mean, in the Americas saying pretty boy was just a way of, you know, they would say the same thing about, you know, any actor or
right,
you know,
yeah,
whatever,
yeah, anybody, and yeah.
Plus,
anybody who...
he had, was keeping that part of his life secret from everybody except his partners and guys like Beaumont.
Yeah.
So that guy saying that was just
It's nice. Just yeah.
Well, I think it is a slur, but it's like saying you're not a tough guy. It's like calling somebody a sissy.
Yeah.
You're a pretty boy. Mm. You're not a tough guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I'm gonna say because he's not like them. He's not a tough, nasty person.
No, he's probably a thin,
yeah.
You know.
So why does Jean-Paul feel like he has to protect his quote unquote secret identity?
Because he was an Olympian, and
they're not outed yet, right?
Competitive skier.
Okay.
He'd be like Lance Armstrong. He'd become, you know, persona non grata.
Gotcha.
I mean, one, nobody knows he's an Alpha Flight, and two, nobody knows he's a mutant. Mm. And, you know, the mutant scare is still rampant south of the border.
Okay.
Well,
yep.
Brian, I got a question since you're our kind of our Byrne scholar.
But
has Byrne ever said that he's put these hints in that North Star is gay. Was he not allowed to make it more overt because of the code and when it was put out, or did he not want to?
It was code, but I mean, he wasn't ever going to make it overt. If you look at his later books like Trio or whatnot, he had characters in there that were gay, but it wasn't, you know, it was just matter of fact.
Right.
And that's the way he thought it should be treated is, you know, it's like it's not anything special.
I agree.
Anything clandestine,
just
bad, whatever.
Right.
It's fact of life. It's right there. Just deal with it and go on.
Yeah, I agree there.
And then even then in Trio, he didn't make it that clear. You know what I mean? If you didn't if you didn't read everything carefully, I think it was only something like, it's the character called Scissors, isn't it, that's supposed to be gay in Trio. And he just mentions something at one stage about his husband.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you would get the, oh, right, okay, so he must be gay. But if you didn't read it carefully, like if you missed that particular statement, you wouldn't really know. Oh, except for, I suppose, the outfit that he wore, that kind of like leather, but it wasn't so obvious.
No. Nigel, was it in the letters pages when he says Byrne made a remark saying, the funny thing is it was the female readers, the female fans that picked up on it more than the men?
I don't remember reading anything about that.
Read it something. It's either an interview,
but
I wouldn't
be surprised if that was true. Yeah, because
I would think
the women from people I've known in the past, women seem to have this instinct. They can pick up on gay guys, even the ones who are not, you know, obviously gay sort of thing. The hiders as well, as it were. Yeah. They have this instinct for it, or a lot of them do. They just know.
So was anybody caught off guard when Raymond is killed, for lack of a better term, by deadly earnest?
The timing of it.
Bit of a shock, just, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just, so perfect. The fact that, you know, Jean-Paul and Jeannie Marie are right there. When all this goes down, it's like serendipity that it happens. Unfortunately, it wasn't good enough for them to be able to save his life. Mm. I have a personal issue with guys that have insta-kill powers like that. And here's someone that is able to kill someone just simply by touching them. That's got to be a horrible thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of a Midas touch kind of thing, you know. It's it's a power that he's embraced, but it's also a bit of a curse too.
Yep. Well, no dates. No dates on Saturday night.
I don't know if can he turn it on and off.
have to keep his gloves on like Rogue.
Yes.
Mm. Good
comparison. Yeah. Who wants to talk, take the unconnected interlude? Are we up to that?
More or less. Well, we just said, the death of Raymond, we were on, weren't we?
Okay.
And then Aurora gets mistaken for Danielle, his daughter, and bundled into the car.
I thought that was a clever plotting move.
Mm.
You know, maybe a little heavy-handed to move the story ahead, but it's like, oh, that's right. Why would he not know?
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Initial look of St. Ives or Deadly Earnest is, I mean, when you get that first, head under the in shadow, made me wonder, is this somebody that we've seen before elsewhere? But
yes,
doesn't seem to be the case.
I wonder about that too.
And that image of Ryman, when he falls dead and it's kind of in that blue scale, blue and gray scale. Just the detail on that is actually kind of sickening.
Yeah, and the eyes are kind of...
They're dead.
There's no one home. Yeah.
This is... I always thought that his... I'll bring it up when we cover the next one because it's more about his origin.
But if you look at the guy that's got Aurora and is getting ready to throw her in the car, he looks like he's Henry Peter Gyrich's...
Gyrich.
Who was the agent from The Matrix?
Mr. Smith.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when I saw these.
He looks a little like Hugo Weaving.
Later became Elrond.
Yep.
And the Red Skull.
Yeah.
And what's his name in V for Vendetta?
Guy Fawkes.
No, I didn't see it.
Anyway.
Unconnected interlude, anybody.
That long descriptive on, Jean-Paul, what he's feeling. And it's funny because someone had pointed out on the Genius of John Byrne group on Facebook how Byrne seemed to be one of the first writers to get away from these kind of descriptives, where you would get the boxes. Now, this is like Frank Miller's bread and butter. In the late 70s and early 80s, he'd have like tons of boxes of text and whatnot to describe everything. And Byrne was doing it too at this particular point in time, but he got away from it not too long after this. And he laments that, says that he shouldn't have gotten away from it. But the way Byrne talked about it, it was always about you should be able to tell the crux of the story with the action that's on the page rather than have to sit there and fill it with all that text.
Except
the camera pushes in on Jean-Paul, who's standing there and is somewhat making a resolution. I mean, what else can you do? There's a three-panel sequence here where the camera is pushing in on him. Mm-hmm. Nobody's talking. Where else can you have the dialogue? It's got to be the caption box. So I think the
third image looks like Mark Hamill in Star Wars when...
Yes, he does.
Finds Uncle Ben and Aunt Beru, not Ben, but Beru and Owen dead.
Excuse me.
Yep.
But yeah.
All right, well, we can cover this interlude, which is leading up to, so why it says unconnected interlude, because it's really leading up to stories lines much later. But I don't think we've been introduced to, this is Smart Aleck.
I think you've seen just a picture of Beta and Omega. Right.
In issue one.
You wouldn't have been able to tell.
Couldn't tell who it was. Obviously, he's smart because he's playing nine guys at once. He's very arrogant, and he goes to get a hot dog, and then...
He dresses like Saul Goodman.
Notice when she shows up, and you see the first shot of her, there's very clearly a sign that says... Fire exit. Now, is the point of that saying, this is your last chance, Alex, get out? Or is it a warning sign that she's trouble? Or is it just, argle bargle decoration?
I think it's just decoration. She's like, she's coming in from the exit almost.
My wife had that hairstyle.
That's a very 80s hairstyle. I don't know what you call it.
We're in the 2000s, though.
The page just before on 14, where he's playing nine guys. I don't know about you, but I got a distinct vibe from Russia with Love, the opening sequence, or just after the opening sequence, where the chess master who designs the trap to lure Bond and to come get the Lecter, he is playing chess at the beginning of the movie, and he gets a not-so-subtle message when somebody delivers him a drink that says, come at once, with the Spectre emblem.
Mm-hmm.
You guys don't remember this movie?
Oh, no, I remember. I'm just trying to...
I got a distinct vibe. Maybe it's just a similarity of a chess expert playing a public exhibition, but I immediately flashed on that when I saw this.
The recoloring of it in the digital copy makes it look like in that first, on the bottom left-hand corner panel where you see him playing chess at nine hands, it gives him red hair.
Interesting.
But that's, again, looking back at the comic, it looks right. It's just, I guess, a little too much of a red blob or whatever they put there to differentiate his head and hair. Oof.
I like this interlude, knowing where it goes. This is a real subtle beat, and I like it.
Yeah. What do you think is the significance of the circles going, you know, off into the distance? Is that supposed to be decoration on the floor, or is that just supposed to say it's a stairway to uncertainty?
It's a path to a dark future.
An ellipse. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
There was an end. Oh, this She's goes way
leading
back.
Leading him down the garden path.
Yeah. Yes, there was a television show in the early '60s, the Jimmy Durante Show, and it always ended on a dark stage where he would give his tagline, you know, good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are. And then he would turn around and he would walk through pools of light just like this off into the distance. But I don't think that's quite what Byrne is going for here. I think it's supposed to be an ellipse saying we'll join this later on.
It's just I don't think he's beaming up or anything like that.
You know, that's actually a really, really good catch there, Kurt.
Yeah.
Did any of you find the secondary story interesting?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Surprisingly so. I didn't know where it was going, but, you know, I did. I thought it was engaging because it goes from, so to speak, modern day. It shows a guy going mad. He pays the price for whatever happens. And then we get on the last page, it ties to the team.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's where this is going.
I mean, it reads like Pippin from Lord of the Rings or the Two Towers going after the Palantir. I don't know if y'all recall that. It's even in the movie where Pippin takes the Palantir from Gandalf in his sleep.
Well, it's also dealing with some kind of...
It really reminded me of that, though.
when he's talking to the gods, and of course, they basically saying, we want your seed. And they're not, you know, they're kind of beating around the bush, but he's basically saying, you know, we want to mate with you. And then they have the discussion of, well, we look like old crones. He's not going to find that attractive. So and they didn't quite understand him. So one of them has to become a very beautiful, young, naked girl. And then they spend one night together. And what gets me is, I guess he was in that realm because he comes back. He's not aged, I don't think. But 9 years. Think he's aged the whole time he was there?
As I flip back and forth, I always got the impression that it took a lot of it.
He looks like it's drained him. I agree.
It's just a Rip Van Winkle effect.
I got the impression that he had aged. Yes.
Yeah.
But you may be right. Maybe he isn't. We see him again. Yeah. He comes back.
I'm going to say, and then, of course, this guy is the Richard Easton, is the man who summons Tundra.
Issue
That's
one.
That's what I thought. That's We've already from, seen him.
From issue one. Yeah. But it's like, the circle is complete.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, the two scientists that are kind of chiding him about him getting a little excited about finding this thing, they're like, yeah, don't get too excited. Just don't jump the gun. Mm. I didn't realize that one of them was a woman until
calls him
Ruth. And I went, oh, that's a woman.
That's a little
a butch woman.
Yep. Well, I mean, just looks like Huey Lewis, but you know, that I'm kidding. It's not really like Huey Lewis. Actually, looks more like William Sanderson when he was younger. But
where do you see him or her referred to as Ruth? Oh, there it is,
top of the page.
I see it. Okay. I didn't catch that at first.
Right, so Ruth.
Well, she's only in two panels. But
yeah, well, maybe there's another side story that they have a backstory that that Byrne was going to utilize them in some way.
I don't know. I do like the way he's drawn these elder gods or whatever they are. The way he's got them as drawing is very, they almost have a kind of a
mystical,
almost an Indian look to them. They look like not American Indian, but whatever Inuit or whatever. Yeah, whatever the native. Yeah. Natives to Canada would be. And again, that's the stuff that I liked about Alpha Flight, that Byrne really leaned into the mysticism of it, and that seemed to go away once he left the book. They kind of forgot about it, and it just became another superhero book.
Liked it because it was kind of his take on Ditkoism. I'm not saying that real well. Other realms or other dimensions, Ditko did it so well, but this is like Byrne's version of that. And I bought it completely. Every time he did it, I was sold. It was like, I got it. I got your shorthand. This is another realm.
Yep. And then, you know, we get the birth of Snowbird and a really badly drawn baby, I would say.
Well, I don't think it's badly drawn. I think it's intentional that this is not your typical... child.
It's not a baby because it's supposed to be a year old.
It's supposed to be 1 year old,
I liked it because we already know what she becomes and what she can become because of the issue before, right? So this is like, and this is why it kind of it paid off. I liked it.
I wonder because this Nirvana comes to Michael T. Youngman and she's obviously pregnant and says, I need your help giving birth to my child, someone, you know, or to the savior, whatever we're going to call it, this thing, this person that's going to save, it's going to fight against the great beast if they come out, you know, if they come back. And then he helps, but he says the embryo is unstable. Clearly it is a transmorph, able to assume any shape it will. But he says if he doesn't quickly bind it to the reality, it may never possess a human form. So that's what binds her to Canada, I think.
Yeah.
But if he hadn't done that, would it just be this amorphous blob that could never be a human? But, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Ready for
time? Let's move on to 8.
Yeah. Okay.
So Hold on a second. One last thing is that did we talk about the cover at all?
Not really.
No, I didn't. No.
And I mean, that was, I thought that was a really striking cover.
Yes.
I mean, of course it's almost ripped from a panel in the issue itself when she chases down the mugger, but it's like, okay, so we're getting this. And I mean, it was when I started reading Alpha Flight, I did not read it when it first came out. I picked up all the issues pretty much all at once in the summer of 88, everything that was available. And I just was like, you know, oh, okay, so this is what we're finally getting. And I thought this was going to give us, you know, a definitive origin and everything. And really what we didn't really get that. But what we got was actually pretty cool. But I actually really liked the cover because it teased something that, you know, that you're waiting for. Whereas the cover of the next issue just says too much eyeshadow.
Yeah, I agree. The cover of 7 that you're talking about, it's obviously not supposed to be the psychiatrist, but that's where I went when I started reading this.
Oh, yeah.
I thought she was going to clean his clock.
Yeah.
But for what reason, I don't know. That's not where it went. But that's the impression that I got when I bought this off the rack.
Yeah, because who else could it be when you first get into the story? But, yeah, then Mugger.
Nigel, are you ready to start eight?
Yes.
Yeah. Just before you do that, I'm going to have to bow out, guys. The press of time here, I'm going to have to go back to work. So I'm going to pass the torch over to Brian to close out the show without me.
No worries. You take care.
Sorry. I'll be back. I'll listen to the last half of this episode because I'm really enjoying the discussion. But cool. We'll see you guys.
All right. Take care. Thanks for coming on, Kurt. Yeah.
Thanks, Kurt.
Up. And away! All right, Nigel. So let's...
Okay, so let's have a look at Alpha Flight issue number 8, which has a cover date of March 1984, release date 13th of December 1983. And the usual team, John Byrne, it says, was the creator, so writer and artist, and maybe inker as well, yes. Mm-hmm. Andy Yanchus, colorist. Michael Higgins, the letterer. Denny O'Neill, it says, is editor, but I think it's Denny O'Neill and somebody else.
Linda Grant was,
listed on the other one.
Yeah, and Jim Shooter, editor-in-chief. Okay, other titles from March 84, which Byrne had a hand in, were Captain America, number 291. He did the cover.
Yeah, this is proof that John Byrne can make even a pink comic book character look good. Yeah.
And this is the famous one where, you know, you've said in the past about you see a Byrne cover and think, oh, great. And buy it, and the artwork inside is like, ugh. And that's me on this one. I bought this one thinking, oh, it's Byrne. Yeah, great.
I'm trying to remember, was that Neary that did it?
I think it was Trimpy inside.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I was so disappointed, yeah. So that's that one. Doctor Strange Classics, starring Doctor Strange, number
one.
He did the cover along with Al Milgrom.
And it was done in a very Ditko style. So much so that when I posted it, I had people argue with me that there's no way that was Byrne.
that it's Ditko.
Yeah. Okay, so you heard Drimpy and Jack Gable.
That's that one. Yeah.
Ugh, that's horrible. I like some of Drimpy's art, so that's just not normal. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, another one, Fantastic Four 264. He was writer and artist, of course, on that one.
And was that Jerry Ordway did the inks, or was that, I forget?
I'm not sure who did the inks, but...
Inferno, that was the one Inferno. In the... They were in their home out in the suburbs?
It's the one where Johnny goes... He's been invited to go into a car race.
Oh, and they think
Johnny and the Thing go to the is it Wonder World or something like that?
Yeah,
and it's all a trick. Yeah,
but that's just Byrne doing art, all full art, pencils and inks.
And then Marvel. I don't know what he did on this one. It says Marvel graphic novel number 8, Super Boxers.
He was the writer, and Ron Wilson did the artwork, and I believe Sienkiewicz did the cover for it.
What's it about?
It's actually, it's kind of like Rollerball, but with boxers.
Oh, okay. Is it about Muhammad Ali or something?
No, futuristic boxers, and they got spikes on their gloves that are retractable. It was actually, I've got it. I didn't care for it.
I have it too. Right. I always thought we should cover it just as a...
I'll have to reread it. Oh my God.
I don't think I've read it.
I like Ron Wilson's art in it. He was trying to be as much Neil Adams as possible. So, yeah.
Right. Okay, another one. The Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe, number 14, which was the Book of the Dead and Inactive 2, Marvel Boy to Zuras. Byrne must have done one or two in there. Well, he would have done Phoenix for a start, yeah. And lastly, yeah, The Thing, number 9. He was the writer on that one.
What Price of Soul? Yep.
Yeah. So that's the other stuff that Byrne was connected to. Yeah.
Well, he did it
one way or another.
Sort of covers on the previous issue.
Yeah. And so Alpha Flight number 8, the title of this one is Cold Hands, Cold Heart, which is a play on the phrase cold hands, warm heart, of course. And the synopsis, I'm using mostly the wiki synopsis. I've just added one or two little bits in there at certain points. But here we go. Cold Hands, Cold Heart. So North Star is out for vengeance. His friend has been killed and his sister kidnapped by the villain Deadly Earnest. He shoots through the sky at supersonic speed before arriving at Earnest's mansion. Crashing through the window, North Star is surprised at first by the lack of security. He makes his way downstairs and reaches Earnest's office. Scene switch, the rooftop of the Queen Elizabeth Hotel in central Montreal. A red and black costumed figure asks for strength and wisdom in order to enact retribution on the life of Earnest St. Ives. And then the female form, masked, flies off into the night. Now back at Earnest's mansion, and North Star is surprised to find that his sister, Aurora, seems to be there of her own free will. But before he can say anything, he is knocked out from behind. Aurora tells Earnest that North Star is her cousin. When North Star awakes, he finds himself in a bedroom with a sword at his throat. A new hero called Nemesis has entered the fray. North Star explains to her who he is, and the two join forces to fight Earnest. As the two escape the locked room, downstairs, Deadly Earnest reveals his origins to Aurora. Earnest was a soldier during World War I. He found himself trapped in a trench with mustard gas descending upon him. Death approaches him, but Earnest fights her off and wins, granting him immortality. When a fellow soldier then attempts to help him out of the pit, the soldier is killed instantly at Ernest's touch. This was the first manifestation of his new powers. Before Ernest can reveal more, North Star and Nemesis burst in and start to attack. Seeing the opportunity to end her ruse, Aurora joins them in the attack. Nemesis strikes at Deadly Earnest, but misses, allowing him to put his death grip on the mystery woman. But to his surprise, it does not work. And as a result, Nemesis cuts off Earnest's arm. And she then flashes her sword, which appears to go through his body several times, ending the fight. North Star, who tried to stop her from killing Earnest, grabs Nemesis' mask and pulls it off, but he is shocked to find that it is not who he thought it was, although the actual identity of this person is not revealed in this issue. Nemesis knocks North Star out, and Aurora allows her to leave. So a few moments later, North Star and Aurora have fled the mansion and they're flying together to tie up some loose ends, as it says. They come upon Danielle Belmond, the daughter of Raymond, and Aurora reveals her to be Deadly Ernest's partner. Apparently, she had this agreement with him, although they never met, and she was in the plot to get rid of Raymond one way or the other. Aurora knocks her out, and Danielle is seen being taken away under arrest by the police. So later still, then, as Aurora and North Star head home, Aurora finds it funny that North Star seemed to think that Nemesis was Danielle when he knew that Ernest thought Aurora was Danielle. And so North Star hits back and says, well, frankly, dear sister, given the tastes of your Aurora persona, he assumed that she romanced herself to safety. And Aurora is not happy by what he's insinuating here, that she may have had sex or whatever with Ernest St. Ives. But North Star says, why not? And he brings up, he says, after your fling with Sasquatch, I'm prepared to believe you capable of anything. So that really rubs her up the wrong way. And she says, how dare you? How dare you judge me on my love life? Mm-hmm. Which insinuates something about maybe North Star's love life. And she says, she flies off and says, don't follow me. Our partnership is ended. So she's off in a huff and she says, I never want to see you again. And that leaves North Star saying, don't leave me. I'll be all alone. And that wraps up that tale. The second part of the backup feature is called Genesis.
Genesis? Genesis allowed is not. Is planet forbidden.
And it begins with a car drawing up to a log cabin in the countryside. And it says, years ago, the newlywed Hudsons visit Heather's old family friend, Michael, two young men, now living out in the wilderness with a mysterious young woman called Naya, whom he has been raising since delivering her birth. At night, Heather witnesses Naya's transformation to an owl to hunt for a nighttime snack. This leads to Michael having to confess the mystical nature of his activities over the last few years. Learning about their strange abilities, the fact that he is now shaman and that Naya is actually this metamorphic creature, James offers them a place in Department H. And so they will become Snowbird and Shaman, part of Alpha Flight. And that concludes the issue.
Well done. Yes.
So, yes, back to the cover then, as Brian hinted at before. Too much eyeshadow.
No kidding. Once you have time to put that on, too.
I don't know. This one, yeah. When I first looked at it, I thought, now, is this Burn or is it kind of maybe Burn loose pencils and somebody else finished it off? Because it doesn't look half as effective as the cover to issue 7, as you said. Although in the background there, North Star still looks like it's a Burn drawing, but it's almost like this was a rush job and it didn't get finished properly.
Yeah, it does. And yeah, her hair especially.
Just to the left of her face and hair, there's just this like red blob. It's supposed to be her shoulder, I guess, but it's just this red.
Yeah, I don't know why it's red.
Rounded. Yeah, there's no detail on it at all and it looks really weird to me.
Yeah, look at the...
What do you think of that?
I think that what makes it a problem is that it's a close-up.
Yeah.
And doing a close-up like that on the cover, at the same time, he doesn't want to reveal anything about St. Ives. he's got to create a situation that you're not going to be familiar with. But it almost looks like he drew it on something smaller and it was enlarged. Because if you look at, you know, underneath her nose and the cheek inset, that the scribble factor there is high. Like it was done smaller and made larger. You know what I mean?
It could have, it could have been that they, because it does look like the thickness of the lines is a little bigger than normal. It doesn't match the rest of the inking. And so it could have very well, maybe this was part of a larger image and they did blow it up and then maybe put North Star in the background because he looks scaled down properly. So, or it could be just like, a rush. I think you're maybe right, Nigel. Maybe it's a rush job. Maybe it's they had to redo
it. He draws really, really fast. So I don't. Yeah.
Maybe a
composite. I never understood calling it rush with him. But that's just
me. Rush meaning maybe it was loose pencils by Byrne and somebody else came along and had to finish up.
Yeah. And didn't have much time.
It could be. Who knows? It could have been. You think that if it was a replacement that in the omnibus or something in the back, they would have alternate covers if it was something that they had to. That'd be a good question for Bird Robotics, Brian.
I don't know. Because either way, I'm afraid that would insult him. I do find interesting that the digital copy, the color palette is a lot lighter. Is you can when you look at North Star's face, it looks almost reddish on the original copy.
Yes, yeah.
But you look at it in the digital one, and it is just pure skin tone, like hers. Well,
they should have made her shoulder, because she wears a red shirt in the book. Make that red, and then you'd have to change Ernest's gloves, which are red. You'd have to make those brown, like they are in the. But maybe they figured they couldn't get the highlights that they have in the shadow on the.
Who wears a red shirt in the book?
No. She's got a yellow shirt.
Yeah, she wears yellow. Yeah.
So it should be that red shoulder should be yellow.
Yeah.
And you'd have to make Ernest's gloves.
And then Ernest's glove would.
Yeah.
Well, they were in the previous issue, weren't they? Kind of, browny.
Because they're supposed to be leather, I think. They're brown.
Yeah. So the colors are kind of a bit off as well.
That could have been a coloring mistake. You know, Byrne doesn't have.
And was that really supposed to be her shoulder? Was that maybe the back of a chair? Or the way that line is so thick. It could be anything,
yeah.
Over the edge of it makes me think it's the back of a chair.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, as I go into this issue and we see North Star in the various flying positions.
Yeah.
So many of these were actually used in Ohatmu. For his profile.
That splash page, issue. I think, is his. Yeah, where he's flying at the camera.
And then really him good. Smashing through the window on page, four?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that is such a cool dynamic image. But even on page 3, they got the shot of him above the house.
Yes, that's
good. And that is such a cool flying shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Nigel, something you didn't have in your synopsis is that they do take, it's North Star and Danielle, and they are at, I guess, at the medical examiner's office, and they can't find out why her father's dead. He doesn't.
Reason why
she's dead.
That's true. I wasn't. Yeah, when I was, as I say, when I was doing this and I was reading through the synopsis, I noticed that the synopsis didn't cover that.
Yeah.
But I thought that it was part of the flashback from the previous issue. So I was thinking your synopsis will cover that. But yeah, I forgot that part there is not the flashback. It's part of the story. And as I say, this synopsis on the wiki, they didn't include that. And neither did I.
I think the scene is strictly to establish that they can't prove he was murdered.
Yeah,
the doctor can't determine why he died. So I think that's just to prove they can't charge Ernest with it.
I mean, did they say that Ernest's powers were magic based?
They don't say. They don't.
Because it almost seemed. I mean, basically, the guy says there's nothing wrong with Belmont, and it took a while probably for them to get his body there for him to do an autopsy, and this is hours later. Did it not decompose at all? You know, rigor set in, anything? Because if it was a magical thing, he might have been able to be revived. That'd be messed up to find out later. Oh yeah, he wouldn't be dead if he didn't do the autopsy then.
Well, does his touch isolated to his hands only, or if he touches you with any part of his skin, do you die?
They didn't go into it.
If he kissed somebody, would that kill him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he does seem to just cover up. He's like Rogue. He just covers up his hand.
Yeah.
Fear of touching someone.
All I do know. Well, I've read things about him, because I was surprised to find out that he appears again in later Alpha Flight
issue
story.
31. He comes back
after Burn's gone off the book, and so whatever they do with him from then on, they kind of change his power a bit. But of course, at the time of this book, we don't know that that was the plan. You know, I mean, I thought that the way that Nemesis carved him up in this story, he'd had it, you know, because she kind of chopped him into bits.
It's interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Mantlo brings him back after Burn leaves. Mm. But I think he comes back for one issue along with Nemesis, and I don't think they're seen again. I think...
she's seen again a couple times.
Nemesis comes back again later, though. Yeah,
does she?
Yeah, her identity does get revealed.
It's not necessarily the same person in future appearances as it is right now in this issue.
Well, it's revealed spoilers. She's his daughter. She is Ernest's daughter.
Yeah. But then there are later appearances, I believe, in later Alpha Flight ones, and it's not Nemesis, is not his daughter, it's somebody else. There's two or three people being Nemesis, apparently.
It's like the Scourge of the other world.
When I remember reading this, I always thought he was kind of, you know, he was an interesting villain. He brought in his dispatch right away, and I thought Nemesis was like, what's her deal? I didn't.
Mm.
Well, as like far her. As St. Ives go, if you watched, I think John Wick 3, there's a guy that could be that could play him.
Oh yeah,
but I think it was a guy that was put in a big suit.
It was, because that guy is really an MMA fighter, I believe.
Oh, okay, but man, he sure did look like him.
Yep, get the gold teeth and everything.
Yep. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I liked this character of Nemesis from this issue, and I always wanted to. I was disappointed that we never saw her again under John Byrne.
Well, that's it. I think maybe that was my point, that he seemed to take a lot of time in trying to develop her, even to the point of hiding her, who she is. Not that we would recognize her, but. You know, the way he has it drawn, it's almost like your face is disfigured, but it's not. It just has lifeless eyes. That Norman Northstar looks into her face, and then
we don't see her.
We
don't see any of it, right? She reminds me of this outfit. Reminds me of somebody else. Is it Spawn?
Stingray is what I was
say. There's that as well. Yeah, but a bit Spawnish as well. With the mask.
This is really, really a cool costume.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a shame you don't see more. The mask, a bit Spawn and Spider-Man.
And Spider-Man, yeah.
Early. Yeah, a little bit that, a little. And with the collar, for some reason, and the way it's two-toned down it goes down her front, I'm getting kind of a Baron Blood kind of a vibe, too.
Yeah.
Edna Mode would hate this costume.
When she slices him up on page 12. The way Byrne has drawn it, it looks like it. When I first read this, I thought, okay, it's having no effect on him, because the way she's drawn him, that he's not being affected by it. But what we don't see is, I guess he is chopped into, you know,
makes me think of the movie Resident Evil, when they go into that hallway full of lasers.
With the lasers, yeah.
And the one guy just gets sliced up and just slides apart.
Yeah.
But they never show again what happened there.
And when she introduces her her sword, which I thought was an interesting concept. I'm going to quibble with Byrne. I think it should be, he said it's scarcely an atom width. I think it would be more like it's a molecule width. That's the way it can slice through other molecules.
Yeah. What is the deal with her cape, though, on page 15? She's standing there over Northstar's body and talking to Jeannie Marie Aurora. And her cape looks like it has a connection onto her
like gloves,
but not the other side. It's going down to her boots.
I think it's connected to her wrist and her ankles.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to see if there's anything else that shows that.
When she takes off on page 5 at the bottom, it's the way it's drawn. But it is connected at her wrists.
And her ankles.
And her ankles, yeah. But it's very subtly done. Yeah.
Well, I think it's later revealed that she's using sorcery too or something. Her blade can... That's the reason why she's still alive, because if she was his daughter, she would be, you know, in her 80s or more. Sword somehow steals the life force from people she kills, and that's how she stays young.
But I guess not completely, because apparently her face...
Well, I don't know if it's an old face or if it's just a... You know, he says it's a face beneath the mask.
Shoulders the anguish of the world.
Exactly. So it's just, he's kind of... He said she has lifeless eyes. So I think he's just horrified at her expression. I don't think she looks like a... Because when he's taking the mask off in that middle panel, she doesn't look old. You just see her lower jaw and her mouth. I thought... When he comes back,
his eyes, dull light eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes.
I was thinking. When she comes back in issue 31, and he comes back and he gets put back together, I guess they take all his parts to
put him back together again.
Humpty Dumpty.
Well, there's a character called Scramble that's able to put him back together, and he comes back alive. And Nemesis comes back, but I thought they both died in that issue, because they totally destroy him somehow by fire or some way, so that there's nothing left to put back together.
I like, just changing the subject a bit, I like the picture on page 6 of Aurora and the way that Byrne kind of draws it right the way through the page.
Right.
Her legs going to the bottom 3 panels. It's a nice picture.
And apparently this is all that Northstar needed to assume that she had sex with the guy.
Until
he gets hit in the head by Muggsy.
Yeah.
Blackjack. Well, it is interesting that she says at the end, just, why did you think that Nemesis was Danielle when Ernest thought I was Danielle? But he doesn't know that. He just knows that his sister was kidnapped. He doesn't know that the reason why they're so chummy is because
he thinks it's Danielle because of what Nemesis says on page 11.
Right, about her father.
And she says, it's time for, the blade of retro. Only your death will bring peace to my soul and the soul of my father.
Yeah.
And so because he's seen Raymond die, so he's thinking, oh, so father, this must be daughter, Danielle. But Aurora didn't hear that, so she doesn't know why he thought that. But then when she asks him, though, he doesn't explain that. He just sort of snipes back at her with the bit about, you know, romancing herself to safety.
Well, when Ernest tries to kill Nemesis, grabs her face.
Yeah.
She says, if this won't work, you cannot steal the life of one who has no life to take. So that's maybe that's explained later. You don't know.
Suggesting that she's died.
Yeah, you guys are right. In issue 31, that is her death.
So I don't think she shows back up, which is
not after that.
No.
So Nemesis after that will be somebody else.
Somebody else, yeah.
Yeah, and so on, yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where the Comic Code Authority kind of, you know, deprived us of something here, because you never get, when she cuts off his arm and then just slices him up, you don't get any sense that he bled out or anything.
No, that's just it. I think you don't know. panel on 12 at the bottom when she first slices his arm off reminds me of in, I don't know what issue, it's Secret Wars, and it's issue maybe three or four.
And where Wolverine
he cuts off.
Creel.
Yeah. He says, out of my way, and he just slices his arm off. Then later he puts it back on, you know, and he transforms again.
Yeah. Yeah, it was better he could do it that way than what the guy did in X-Men 3, The Last Stand. He just kept growing his arms back.
Yeah. Then he kicks him, doesn't he?
Kicks him in the nuts and says,
yeah, grow,
those
grow
back.
That back. Yep.
Bad movie, funny lines, time. Boy. Now, do you think that she reacted a little too harshly on him for that assumption on his part to dissolve their relationship and say that she never wants to see him again? I mean, I can understand being mad at him and all that, but just that
never wanting to see him again. It seemed a bit sudden, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, maybe that's the way.
The Aurora personality is very much a free spirit. And this feels more like Jean Marie reacting to this.
Exactly.
Aurora. So I don't know if it's a bit of her personality coming. Yeah, her personality kind of coming through, and she's outraged that he thought she might use her feminine wiles to, you know, save herself or whatever. And I think when he looks devastated, and I think it's because, this has not been established that, but, you know, him being alone, but I guess because Raymond is dead, you know, this dear friend he had, mentor or whatever role he played, you know, and now he is alone. He doesn't have, now that he's found his sister, and now he's going to be, you know, he's going to be on his own. You know, he tolerates everybody else. He likes his sister, but he seems like he tolerates everybody else in Alpha Flight.
Yeah. Well, and also without his sister, he has real no reason to stay with Alpha Flight.
Exactly.
She was the only reason that he joined.
Right. He can go back to being a skier or whatever he wants to do.
Yeah. So when we go to this next story, Genesis. The first page, looking at it now, I think of Jurassic Park. But beyond that, it kind of shocks me a little in the fact that Heather seems to have to go out in the woods to meet every new character. Because here she goes out and meets, you know, Michael with Snowbird there. But also it's in the woods because of what Mac does, takes her out to the woods sometimes that she runs into Logan.
Yeah.
As part of his
secondary or original origin story. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask, are we to assume that this is that in this that Snowbird is 15? Because I think it said...
Yeah.
15 years. So she's like 14 human years, but she may age quicker. I don't know if she's supposed to be a 14-year-old girl or she's aged up. So
well,
she's...
in the on page 20, when Mac and Heather are talking at night, she's saying also she must be at least 20.
Yeah.
That's what Heather thinks.
The look on Heather's face in that first panel on page 20, that's a womanly look. And I'd say it borders somewhere between jealousy and I mean, she doesn't like her, you know, like jealousy and the I don't like her look. She's suspect of everything right now.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, she finds out some interesting things. And then, of course. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say when she thinks she's 20. She says, well, then she would have been living with them when I lived next door or whenever I knew them.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about that. So I think she's just being overly suspicious. But
I'm reading a lot into the expression on her face, because that's an expression of, you know, I mean, beyond suspicion. There's something else in that. At least that's, again, from what I'm seeing in that and what she's saying. It's funny, though, because, you know, she finds out what they are. Mac finds out what they are. And all of a sudden, hey, join the government. We'll turn you into weapons.
Yeah. join the crew. I guess this is before Snowbird really kind of mastered looking human, because she talks about her as these weird eyes. And she thought she was blind at first, and then she doesn't eat. And then they, of course, I think they're sleeping in their Jeep or their car. I don't think they're in the cabin. they're sleeping in their vehicle, I think, in the back.
And
she gets up, and obviously, you know, and the way he's drawn it, they're sleeping nude. And then so she gets up and gets dressed, and then it's when she sees
Aurora. She's got her socks on.
It's cold, well, wait, you know.
She doesn't have her socks on at first, and then she must pull them on.
She puts them on, but she's putting
her shirt on. Yeah, it's a few hours later. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, she wasn't wearing a lot of clothes to begin with. She's wearing cutoffs and a tube top. Yeah.
Very popular back then.
Very. Except she is wearing a t-shirt, because we see her walking, I guess, when she's horrified at she sees Snowbird eat a gopher or a rat or something. And she's kind of horrified, and she's got a t-shirt on, and she's running back to the...
Okay, do you see the square in the bottom left-hand panel on page 20? You see Snowbird there in the nude, and then right behind her is a tree, another tree, and there's a square. Let me look at the issue. I'm looking at the digital copy.
I don't see a square in my copy.
I don't see a square.
Yeah, let me take a look.
You're looking at the actual floppy, aren't you, Nigel?
I'm looking at the actual comic. Yeah. I don't see a square.
I don't either.
And no, it's not. It's not in that. It's only in the digital copy. That's weird.
Must be misprint.
I mean, it's colored just like the trees.
Mm.
That kind of off blue.
Where is it exactly?
It's between the two trees. I mean, Heather is on one side of one of the trees.
You can see Heather.
And so there's the tree that's basically following along Snowbird's back. Mm. And then the tree that Heather's hiding behind, and it's in between the two.
Oh.
But, definitely not in the regular copy. So.
No.
Whew. I'd have to check my trade to see if it's on there. Anyway, but you get to see her turn into her owl figure, and for some reason, Heather looks like she's about to throw up.
Yeah,
I don't. If she just horrified that she saw someone change, or
must have watched her eat it.
That was it. Maybe it was silent. Yeah.
She watched for too long. Yeah.
And there's something about the way they make Mac look when he's younger. It almost looks like Paul Smith drawing him in the face. When you look at him on page 19 and then on page 22, he looks more like Reed Richards in that middle panel, and the eyes and the smile. Not the hair, of course.
When Snowbird or Narya, is that it?
Narya.
When she comes out of the woods, when they first show up. It's a little like if you've seen Forbidden Planet, the 50s movie, which is based on The Tempest. You know, you've got a young woman that's lived with, so she's lived with Michael T. Youngman, and these are probably the only other humans she's seen. So she's a little awkward around him and doesn't know quite how to act because, or think of Vina from The Cage.
Yeah.
You know, she grew up with a bunch of scientists and doesn't know how to act around other humans.
Yeah. When I was reading this, the voice that I was hearing in my head, it's so funny, it took me till now to realize, was Luna Lovegood from the Harry Potter movies.
I could see that.
Just the voice. Yeah.
I could see that.
Interesting.
All right. Any final thoughts?
Entertaining issues, both of them.
Yeah.
Characters that we hadn't seen, and honestly, we'll never see again. But it gave us, you know, some insight into the twins that will give people stuff to mine for years and years on down the road.
Yeah. Well, the next, these kind of two and dones, or like the next two issues, are kind of contain stories, which we've kind of covered, but we'll cover again. We do 9 and 10. It's a Sasquatch story.
At this stage, I was enjoying Alpha Flight, although I was sort of thinking, when are they going to do something as a team?
Right. It's a lot of introduction and setup.
Yeah.
There's no.
So I was kind of like, you know, come on, what are you doing? And so I was a bit worried because of the way how this story ended with the Aurora and Null Star falling out. I thought, oh, that's not good. That doesn't bode well for the future of the team. But yeah, I was enjoying the stories at this time. As I say, I was wanting them to do something as a group. Be careful what you wish for. Yeah.
Well, maybe this shows he wasn't interested in doing this sort of a team book, and he wanted to explore the characters because we get these little side stories because they have not done anything as a team, really.
Yeah.
Except for this is that
thing about he didn't want to do it, but then he decided he'd better do it.
Yeah.
But he kind of. It's kind of like, but I'm not going to give the people what they expect.
Yeah, well, don't give them what they want.
Which is another team book. But that's what I wanted, really. I wanted Canada's Avengers, if you like. But
Well, and what's funny is I'd forgotten that Box, I always thought he was kind of there from the beginning. And he doesn't show up. Yeah, he doesn't show up until much later.
Uh-huh.
Well, any final thoughts on this issue? I think we've got a pretty good job of covering it.
Oh, we got everything covered, I think, pretty well.
I'm kind of the next two issues are two of my favorites. I think we've covered them already. Parts of, but I like that storyline.
Oh, the thing. I mean, not thing, but yeah.
The
Sasquatch story.
Mm-hmm.
Two-parter.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a good one. Well, that
is a good one.
It is, yeah. Brian, you want to tell the folks where they can get a hold of us?
Yeah, in fact, I got something new to tell everyone. Obviously, the easiest place to get a hold of us, to write us, to tell us what you think about an episode would be actually on Facebook in our group, Third Degree Burn. But I want to add something, and that is, with all the Facebook groups that there are out there today and all the bots that are joining groups willy-nilly and throwing out spam and everything, we've made the group where you actually have to answer a few questions to become a member. You have to agree to the group rules. And so if you don't do that, you can't actually join the group. I believe you can still come in. You can still look around and, you know, read all the posts and everything, but you can't contribute. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to join the group, if you want to, you know, tell us what you want us to cover or respond to any of the shows that we put out, be sure to, you know, answer those questions, agree to the group rules and join. I'd like to hear from you. Otherwise, you can email us at gottagetburned@gmail.com, or you can still reach out and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes. We'd really like to hear from you. We want to know what you guys think about what we're talking about. And, you know, this is also, if you join our group, it's a great way to keep up on our activities, which we've got activities coming up. Cool stuff. What's next, by the way?
Coverage-wise?
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming we got these Alpha Flight ones coming down the pipe, but is there anything else that we're...
Not really. We've been kind of deep in Alpha Flight. I think there are a few things that will come out of our little meetup next month, which we're having at your house and in Texas. I think there are a couple shows that will come out of that. That will be kind of special shows, but
yep.
I don't think none of that's been finalized yet. So I think
we're actually going to have some video because Christopher's bringing his full kit and gimbal. So you can record video of us and just Nigel's experience is something that we're looking forward to. he's going to get here a few days before most of y'all. So we'll have one day where he can get over his jet lag and then we can show him some real cool American stuff here. And then once you guys get him, we can do our comic shop crawls. But I think we've got to show him some really cool stuff while he's here.
Yeah, it's his first time in the States, so everything's going to be new.
Yeah, if y'all don't know, the last week of May we're having a get together here in Fort Worth, Texas. We are going to do Comic Shop Crawl probably over 2 days. So if you want to join us, we'll be providing that information within our Facebook group. And then on the last day, which is that Saturday, we're going to the Dallas Fan Expo, as a group to walk around, check out the place, give our own critiques of what's going on and the cool stuff that's there. Nigel, have you ever been to any of the conventions?
Not in America, of course. No, I've been to one or two Star Trek conventions back in the 90s in Britain, but they're the only conventions that I've ever been on.
It's so different. It's so different now. So it'll be a definitely an interesting experience. And there's so many diverse celebrities showing up for this one. I mean, they get like the Back to the Future cast.
Yeah.
And then guys like Dolph Lundgren and John Cena. And
they got Anthony Daniels, I believe.
Yeah, Daniels. Yeah. And C-3PO. I mean, there are also a, I'll say, crap ton of anime and animation voice actors and such. Mr. T is going to be there too, and John Boyega, Walt Goggins, Huey Lewis. Who would have thought?
And the news.
Yeah, well, the news isn't there. It's just Huey.
Well, I will say, if you're gonna, if anybody locally is going to go to the show, look for us, because we have made some special 10th anniversary Third Degree Burn T-shirts, which we will be wearing.
Yes.
So look, keep a lookout for those.
Yeah, so I won't be wearing my Geek Man cosplay. So, osh checks. Anyway, I hope you guys have really enjoyed the episode. We enjoyed putting it together. Like I said, you know, reach out to us on Facebook or email or whatever, and let us know what you think, what you like, what you want. I don't think there's anything else we have to cover yet, is there?
Nope.
All right, well, for Third Degree Burn, that's Tim Elliott.
Good night.
That is Nigel Spank.
Goodbye.
There was a Kurt Greenfield here, but he's sadly had to go away. And I am Brian Hughes. Take care. So long. Have fun.
Two pieces, this is my last resort. Suffocation, no breathing, don't give up if I cut my arm bleeding. This is my last resort.
Good day.
Good day.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the 22 Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to GottaGetBurned@gmail.com. That's GottaGetBurned@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.